With a doctorate in naturopathy and holistic philosophy, and 45 years of learning, lecturing, and teaching, Dr. Michael Rice is simply a great guest to start out our new year, or any new now. He's director of Heartland in the Ozarks, hosts his own radio program, and his ebook is Why Is This Happening to Me Again? I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. Michael, why is this happening to me again? Why are we doing another interview?
I guess we're just blessed.
I guess so. Good answer. As I mentioned in the intro, Michael's very broad platform of investigating and teaching about why is this happening to me again has not only helped so many people, but it's brought you into a wonderful world of clarity that you can share.
Well, you know, one of the keys, I think, in doing our work is doing our work. The day of we talk about something but we don't do it personally, I think, is over, and each person has to live up to the standard of their own work. And, of course, our work with Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And, by the way, of course, that's the title of my book. And it's a free download in a half a dozen or so languages on our website, which is whyagain.org. And so people are welcome to go ahead and download the book free. But the essence of the question is that people tend to get stuck in these patterns, and they play the game of, well, my pattern isn't my fault, it's your fault. You did it to me. You made me mad. You hurt me. You made me sad. You made me angry. That really upset me. And we have a functional definition of denial. You hear denial being spoken about all over the planet, but what does it really mean? And so our functional definition of denial is when I speak about someone or something else as the cause of what's happening inside of me, I'm in denial. And the reason why it is so destructive to be in denial is because whatever you've experienced in your life, you've created. And to pretend that somebody else is the cause of it means that you have to hide a part of your own mind from you. Yourself. And that's called in this work dissociation. So when I deny the root of the problem that I keep going through over and over and over again is inside of me and it's hidden from me. I'm dissociated from it. And what happens on an energetic level, I used to speak regularly at a conference called Global Sciences, and there was a gentleman there named Marcel Vogel, who was a 23-year senior scientist from IBM. Marcel had the instrumentation in the laboratory with which to take a picture of the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. So if I hide and dissociate something on an energetic level from myself, I literally add energy to it, and that high energy wave radiates out from me and resonates or pulls somebody else in to do it again. If I stay in denial, I talk about them as cause, and when they do the behavior that they do, drawn in from what I've dissociated from, they literally resonate that content, those brain cells in me, and out of those brain cells, I build my brain's image of them, and they show up in my mind with my problem attached, and I'm sure it must be their problem. And that action is called projection. You know, the world teaches that projection is taking something that's inside of you and putting it outside of you. That's not accurate. That's actually externalization. Projection is something inside of me resonates, and because I've hidden it from myself and can't look at it directly, I make up images of other people, other places, other situations. And then my mind really shows me that they're the problem in my life. And, of course, one of the tongue-in-cheek questions that I love to offer in my workshops is, you'll notice if you've been through a particular painful reality 87 different times with 42 different people, you're the only one that was there every time. It's all about you.
Yes.
And forgiveness is the solution.
Yes, well, Michael, that's where I actually wanted to go next. We're so in
cool.
sync here. I love this. any lead-in question or comment I could have for you, I think will take us in a relevant and very interesting field of discussion. So as we spoke earlier, you had aloha in your phone message greeting these days. You live in the Ozarks. Talk about why and how that came in, and I think that's going to lead us into the Ho'oponopono, which is forgiveness, and then into the Aramaic, which is also forgiveness.
Well, the word aloha is exactly the same as the word that was used in Aramaic when in the ancient scriptures they described the first law. In Aramaic, the word is rachma. And rachma speaks of a condition in the frontal lobes of the brain. You know, the Greeks translate, there's so many mistranslations when you get from Aramaic to Greek. The Greeks totally mistranslated, and they said you've got to love and that first law. And they said, well, what's the first law? Said, well, you've got to love God, neighbor, as yourself. And that's totally, completely inaccurate. In Aramaic, what it says is you've got to have rachma, a condition in the frontal lobes of your brain, active when you think of the Creator, when you think of neighbor, in order to maintain self. And so maintaining this condition in the mind in Hawaii is called aloha. And so the aloha spirit, aloha, I believe that perhaps the Hawaiians are directly related to the ancient Aramaic because that concept is identical. And my understanding in the Hawaiian Islands, before some of the warlike tribes in the neighborhood started to invade, Hawaii was an extremely peaceful place because they had literally the aloha spirit. They had active in them their human lives because that presence of rachma, aloha, was in them. And it's a gateway that allows human life to stay present in us. You know, one of the first questions I ask in the main workshop I do now, why is this happening to me again, is I ask people, how many have ever held a newborn child? And I ask everyone now, imagine holding that newborn again, and in a single word, describe the essence of your newborn. And everywhere on the planet, tens of thousands of people, we've asked the question. And everybody's answer is always some variation on the theme of love. Peace, beauty, purity, sweetness, intelligence, presence, powerful, always variations on the theme of love. And I offer to people the reason why everybody describes their newborn as love is because everybody knows what human life is. And the specialty of our world is to pound it out of us as quickly as possible, to destroy the condition of aloha or rachma in the mind and replace it with hostility and fear. And when we replace rachma in Cuba, which is another filter in the brain, when we replace those filters with hostility or fear, then the gateway for human life is blocked. It's closed. And now we have human forms without human life. So our input to people is that the active presence of love is our human lives. Without it, we're not functional humans. We look like humans, we talk like humans. Well, actually, there aren't that many words that are human in people who live in the world of hostility and fear. You know, if you go back 2,000 years ago to the ancient physics teaching called the New Testament, you hear the man named Yeshua. He's popularly known as Jesus, but his name wasn't Jesus. It was Yeshua, and he was a physicist. He was a physiologist. He was a geneticist. He knew exactly how the world worked. And in that native language, they understood exactly how to bring about the presence of human life. And when we lose human life by becoming by buying into the hostile, fearful world, we lose connection to that active presence of love. Now, the solution is offered, and most of the Western world has been taken over by a Greek idea of forgiveness, a Greek definition of the word. If you listen to or read the writings of Vladimir Lenin, he tells us the way to destroy a culture is to change the meaning of its words. I believe that the reason there is so much insanity, you know, we've killed about 275 million people on planet Earth in the last 75 years, documented, 275 million. Why? Why is there such rage, such hostility? Why do we turn the television on and see, you know, 99% of programming is based in hostility or fear? Because the presence of love has been lost. Human life has been disappeared. And what has taken over is the hostility and fear-based teachings. And one of the keys to keeping oneself on track is the words that they use. Again, go back to the physiologist Yeshua 2,000 years ago, and he says the power of life and death is in your words. If we're using words that are actually based in the presence of love, if we're functioning out of that, then we're supporting and bringing about human life in the world. A second question we ask in our workshops is, how many have ever done something they regret? Of course, everybody kind of giggles and puts their hand up. It's okay. So now tell me, pick out one situation where you did something that today you are in regret at having done that. What were you feeling that motivated you to do whatever it is that you now say, I regret that I did that? And again, 100% consistency. The words are always hostility and fear. Hostility and fear are destructive frequencies, literally destructive energies to the human system. They destroy or wipe out the active awareness of the presence of love. Forgiveness, as the Greeks have taught us, goes like this. You know, Robin, you did something really terrible that caused all this pain inside of me, but it's okay. I'll let you off the hook. I'll forgive you. Well, if I'm in terrible pain, if my physiology is producing some kind of a painful experience, it's producing that experience because that energy of pain is inside of me, and while you may have triggered it, you are not cause. And if I let you off the hook because my physiology is producing pain, I've done nothing whatsoever to address or remove the root of my pain. And if I never learn how to address and remove the root of my pain, I get to live the title of my book. Why is this happening to me again? In Aramaic, you'd never be invited to forgive someone else. Stop forgiving people. You'd never be invited to forgive yourself. Stop trying to forgive yourself. In Aramaic, you'd be handed a tool called forgiveness, with which you go inside yourself and remove the root of your pain. So it is a way to collapse the projections, to collapse the pictures made out of hostility and fear-based data inside of us, and go back directly to the root of the pain that we've been hiding from ourselves. And coming back into direct relationship with that pain and being able to bring love present in that experience, in Aramaic is called forgiveness. We have a worksheet on our website, which people can download freely, and they can also listen. We do a radio show 5 days a week from 1 till 2 o'clock Eastern time, and they can go to our website, and there's a link in the upper left-hand corner that says Start Here, and it explains the whole process of forgiveness and how to get started with the worksheet process. The first link is a copy of Chapter 24 of my book. It's a free download. The second link is the actual worksheet. Step by step, here's how you collapse the idea that it's got anything to do with anybody else, and you find a place within yourself where healing is needed.
Yes.
And then the next six links are links to radio shows where we've walked somebody through the whole process. So there are six different MP3s that people can download and have a full set of instructions for how to go inside of oneself and remove the root of fear, hostility, grief, rage, and pain of any sort, and that's called forgiveness.
You mentioned also on your website love versus carbon-based memory.
Correct.
Detail that out a little bit for us.
Sure. If you ask someone where, you know, one of my favorite quotes comes from Albert Einstein, and he says this, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. So Einstein says matter doesn't exist. Now, when you recognize that matter doesn't exist, then you start to recognize that what you have is an energetic system that you call your body. It's nothing but solidified energy. And if you talk to a modern-day physiologist about what it is that this device called a body-mind unit is made of, they'll tell us that the base element is carbon. And so carbon, this carbon-based device, stores information and energy. Literally, every thought, every feeling, every reality that one engages in is stored holographically in every cell in the structure, including the sperm and the egg. So were you to conceive a child tomorrow, that child would have in its structure every thought you've ever thought, every feeling you've ever felt, every reality you've ever engaged in. And these memories are stored in this carbon-based device. Now, if you look from a physicist's point of view, and again, I go back to the Aramaic being physics, and you ask yourself, what is the atomic structure of carbon? And what you find is, in this carbon atom, there are 6 electrons, 6 protons, 6 neutrons. What's the number of the storage system that takes us out of hostility or fear? 666. Oh my goodness, the beast. And, you know, most people have been trained to look out there for something that's going to get them, and they've been tricked and aren't looking inside themselves. They deny and dissociate from what's inside themselves. So the idea of carbon-based memory is to recognize that we hold these generational patterns of hostility and fear in this carbon-based device. These frequencies in this carbon-based device radiate out from us and draw somebody in to bring forward an experience, and carbon-based memory makes up a whole picture world that exists only between our ears. And so forgiveness is about collapsing the data in carbon-based memory and removing everything that doesn't belong. And of course, what doesn't belong is that which is based in hostility or fear and doesn't support human life. What does belong is anything keyed to that active presence of love. So what we invite people to do is every time your physiology, even though you're talking about how your spouse did it, your child did it, your neighbor did it, it's all their fault, that situation, I'm really upset at that situation, that's a statement of denial. And so what we invite people to do is to recognize that every time their physiology is producing something that's less than love, stop and do some forgiveness work. Remove that from carbon-based memory. And recognize that it's yours and it's about you. It's not about anybody else other than you. And as you do that, and you know, people will say, well, how do I tell if something that I'm feeling is mine or not? And you know, we've got this really very complicated test for assessing whether or not something is yours or not, if something that you're feeling is yours or not, and that is, are you feeling it? And if you're feeling it, you know that it's in your carbon-based device. And what pain is about is the carbon-based device warning us there's an energy in here that doesn't belong. And most everybody on the planet has been trained to talk about everybody else when they're in pain instead of going, I'm in pain. I think I'll find the energy that's in my carbon-based device and remove it so that I can live out of this human life, this active presence of love, and be in another mind than the mind of my body. And if you go back into the ancient Aramaic language, being in that mind is far beyond a religious idea. If you remember, they said the goal of the work was to be of like mind with Christ. There are two minds we can live in. We can live in carbon-based memory, which is all from the past, and it just repeats, repeats, repeats. We call that the replicant mind. Or we can live in this mind of love, which was called the mind of Christ, and that's where original creation is possible. So it's way beyond a religious idea and a whole lot better than, you know, a lot of the religious dogma that's been made up to keep us locked into our hostility and fear.
Of course, yes. And I had as a question, but now I may just ask you if that, what you were just speaking about, is that where your doctorates in naturopathy and holistic philosophy come together for you as a healer?
Absolutely, that and the ancient Aramaic teachings, having found those teachings and recognizing there's some key concepts that were turned totally around and totally backward by the Greeks, because in the Western world, most, you know, this fellow named Yeshua 2,000 years ago, if he sat in most churches today, he'd say, that's all Greek to me, because it's Greek thought that's been put in his mouth. You know, one of the key words that I think really, more than any other word, what I've heard back from people over the last 45 years of doing this work is a key concept that turns things around for people is when they understand the Aramaic definition of the word sin. And in Aramaic, sin is an archery term, and when you fire at the target and you miss the bullseye, scorekeeper yells sin. All it means is you're off the mark. And yet, what we call the non-being mind or carbon-based memory has made of that an idea that you should buy into that as your identity. And to buy into that as your identity means you have to give up your true identity, which is absolutely this awesome active presence of love. And so our work is about supporting people in doing that. And basically, my wife and I travel 6 to 10 months of the year anywhere on the globe that we're invited. And we pay our own expenses, and our workshops are free. So we're open to going anywhere we're invited. We just actually came back from a month in Europe and 2 weeks in Costa Rica. We're heading back down to Costa Rica to do an intensive in February, the middle of February. And we're actually looking at creating a Heartland South. We've got a teaching center in the Ozarks called Heartland. And it's a place where we do summer intensives, and people come study with us there anywhere from 9 days this summer we're doing a 73-day intensive. And next year, we're working on doing creating a Heartland South in Costa Rica as a place to do things in the summer.
Well, it's quite wonderful when you look at Costa Rica. We've been talking about us as single human beings, and to look at a country like Costa Rica to see what they're doing, maybe since you've been down there more recently than I have, certainly you can share with some of their policies that are really coming into a new alignment, which is quite exciting.
It's awesome. One of the reasons why we're looking at doing a center in Costa Rica is that one, over 60 years ago, they outlawed the military. Now, the world said, they're going to, you're down there with those banana republics, and they're always at war. They're going to overrun you. Costa Rica hasn't been overrun in 60 years. They have a policy where by 2020, by their own choice, they're going to be carbon neutral. They'll have a zero carbon footprint on the earth as a country. Right now, over 90% of the power comes from solar and wind, and they have a commitment to move to 100% of their power being solar and wind. As far as health goes, the military budget is still there, but they use the military budget for health care, for education, and for sanitation in the country. And I just read a statistic recently that a male of 60 years of age in Costa Rica today has a 10 times better chance of reaching 90 than a person in the United States. And they spend 15% on health care, or so-called health care. It's really disease care. But 15% of what is spent in the United States is spent per person in Costa Rica. And if you look at the world statistics on, preventable deaths and, all of the statistics that go along with the state of health of a country, and even though Costa Rica is a third world country, spending 15 cents on the dollar, they're right on a par with the United States in terms of health. And it's an awesome and amazing place to just see what they're doing. And we for the last 45 years, we've always kind of done our work on our own hook. And for the first time, we're starting to look at doing a crowdfunding project to assist us in creating a center there that will be a holistic living center that will bring in all levels of principles from nutrition. When we do an intensive, we do a total fresh and raw dietary meal regimen, all vegetarian, vegan, and all fresh and raw. We start out with a fasting regimen, a short fasting regimen, and move into very intense process work. And it's just an awesome place to find fresh, raw, organic food. We're actually looking at an operational farm that has 9 acres of greens under cultivation and provides the whole Central Valley with greens, 1,000 fruit trees. It's just an awesome space, and the consciousness and the awareness about food is amazing.
Yes, I experience that a lot on Kauai, although they're doing their battle with the GMOs over there, but they're making headway, I'm happy to say. And Michael, you have so much knowledge about the Essenes via the Aramaic language, and once again, the way definitions are changed throughout time is you know, I would say it's sinful, but it's really missing the mark.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And I heard a talk you gave one time, and you were speaking about how when people would speak in tongues, and even that has been shifted so much. And I know from some other reading I've done, and well, actually, this was a woman, Lorraine, that I met who was with Padre Pio when he was speaking in tongues. She was she was with many other people from different countries, and everyone spoke a different language. And yet when Padre Pio spoke to them, they all understood in their language what he was talking about.
Yeah. Well, when you talk about the GMOs and you know, the money, and I won't mention the company that we all know and cherish in the world that is spreading these GMOs around the globe, bought into, or at least got the science community in Costa Rica to approve them coming in to do things, and within a matter of 3 or 4 days, almost 60% of the counties in the nation of Costa Rica made it illegal to consume, to grow, or to sell GMO food.
Right.
That's how much awareness there is there. So that's pretty cool. And then the speaking in tongues thing, you know, today what passes for speaking in tongues is somebody babbles on in some unknown or unknowable, you know, set of frequencies coming out of their throat, and somebody else supposedly interprets and says this is what it means. And, of course, that's got nothing to do with the original speaking in tongues. If you go back and read the original stories, the disciples were so filled with truth and they were in such congruency that what they spoke, though there maybe would have been a people speaking a dozen different languages in front of them, they each heard or understood, grasped the meaning of what was being said directly. And, you know, to me, that's one of the signs that we're really moving in the right direction, is when, even though someone may not comprehend all the words, they get the energy. There's a story about the fellow who's speaking, and a little old lady goes up to him after him, and she says, "You know, who you are spoke so loudly, I didn't hear a word you said." And if we each do our work, who we are is going to speak much louder than any words we could say. And that, I think, is really the key and what's going to bring transformation to every corner of the globe. And reaching critical mass is one of the things that we're about supporting in the world. And it's pretty awesome how many different places real, true conscious awareness is coming through, coming from, and expressing in the world. It's pretty awesome time to be alive.
Yes, and once again, we can use the archery metaphor, because if you're a straight shooter, you are going to be understood. And
that's
there's nothing like speaking the truth for that.
Exactly. And, you know, you go back to that statement that was made again in the Aramaic, was, "And a house divided against itself cannot stand." If there's one part of my mind that's doing one thing, and there's another part of me that I'm hiding from myself, it can't follow through. It can't continue. It's going to fall apart.
Yeah. You also know the origin of the word neighbor, and I just love that. So maybe we can finish with you sharing that with us today.
Yeah, in Aramaic, when they talked about loving your neighbor, actually, again, the word was rachma, and what it said was that you had to maintain this condition in the frontal lobes of your brain that was called rachma when you thought of anyone, because in the Aramaic, the word neighbor means anybody that you think about. So if I think about the peasant in the field in Russia, that peasant is my neighbor. If I haven't thought of them yet, in Aramaic, they're not my neighbor, but the instant that I bring them near to me in my mind, they are now my neighbor. So in Aramaic, there are many words that are mental words that have been translated as physical words. In and around the 6th century, they changed the definition of the word neighbor to be the guy down the block, and now we can go make war on somebody and steal their property, and, you know, they're not our neighbor anyway, so what's it matter? But in Aramaic, if I think about them, they're my neighbor.
The Good Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, whyagain.org is his website. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, and sign up for our weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. And for our fully updated podcasts, it's iTunes, Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.